The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Glenn Beck.
All right. No political bias. That's the catchphrase. You're going to hear everywhere. No political bias. The Office of the Inspector General found no evidence that there was any political bias that played any role, either with former Director Comey or the other FBI agents during the Hillary Clinton email investigation. So it's all good now. Carry on. Nothing to see here. No. Hold on. There are a few highlights of the 568-page report that probably are worth a discussion. The report makes it really, really clear that there is no evidence of political bias influencing this investigation. So why did they take 568 pages to make that point? Because it's really not hard. If there's nothing going on, why have almost 600 pages that say, oh yeah, there was nothing going on? Well, if you read this, I think what they want us to understand is how difficult it is to prove political bias. I think the Inspector General wants us to read this report in its entirety and read between the lines. And here are a few of the highlights. The report straight out eviscerates James Comey. Now, one of the most controversial decisions President Trump has made so far has been his decision to fire the former FBI director. Now, let's imagine, just for a second, that Trump never did that, and Comey was still sitting in his desk at the Hoover Building yesterday. I can almost guarantee you that after the release of this report yesterday, Comey would have been fired by this morning. Now, here are just a few of the quotes that the IG uses to explain his behavior. Extraordinary and insubordinate. Not reasonable. Engaged in ad hoc decision making. Serious errors of judgment. It goes on and on and on and on. This report destroys Comey's behavior. There is no way that if Trump hadn't have fired him, he could have remained FBI director. Now, the report also goes on to analyze the behavior of several FBI agents that were involved in the Clinton administration. There was Strzok and Page. But two of the five employees that showed questionable behavior, either through text messages or instant messaging, if you read the text and the transcripts, it's pretty damning. In Strzok's case, his bias could have caused a delay in analyzing the contents of Anthony Weiner's laptop. And I want to explain this later, but let me just emphasize, it could have. But as the OIG alludes, political bias is really hard to prove. Now, another agent that had been caught saying questionable things and instant messaging was actually one of the agents that conducted the Hillary Clinton interview. In that interview, the OIG seems to acknowledge that the FBI caught Hillary in a lie and still let her go. No political bias. Why? Because it's hard to prove. That story is fascinating. So if you read this, do you see a theme here? The Hillary train just keeps on rolling. She's going to escape a courtroom for the 14,000th time, but as is the common theme for the entire Clinton family, it is those around them that suffer the most. The FBI has been tarnished. People have lost their jobs. Agents have been humiliated. And all of this for an arrogant and corrupt politician.
It's Friday, June 15th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
We have Jason Petrill in, who is our head researcher and head writer for the program. And Jason is former military intelligence, and we had him read the report. You didn't get it to all 560 some pages, but you did read about 300 pages solidly, and the rest you kind of glanced through.
I quit because I was going blind.
Yeah, from reading stuff, I know. Is this unusual for a report to be this long?
I mean, some of the others that we've read from the IG have been, what, like 10, 20 pages, something like that? I mean, this was insane. This was like near approaching 600. And the scope of it was like what will really make your eyeballs fall out of your head. Because it's supposed to just be centering around the Hillary Clinton investigation. But they talk Russia investigation a little bit in this, just briefly. To describe some of their actions. We can get that in a second. But then they also talk about leakers. The craziness and the, I guess, the incompetence and just some of the weirdness that was going on in the FBI was all pretty much brought to the surface in this investigation. And that's kind of, I think, why it was so long.
So, Jason, tell me about the part where they catch Hillary Clinton in a lie. Because it's interesting the conversations they have before she's interviewed.
Right, so there was about five, I think exactly five people that the IG fingered as these people either sent or biased text messages or using an instant messaging service that was like, you know, organic to the FBI. They used to speak from agent to agent. And this one specific one had to do with the instant messaging service. But one of the agent who was described as Agent One was sending some pretty biased stuff, talking about how this is stupid, this is pointless, we've already made up our mind, that type of stuff. That's almost a direct quote. Nothing's going to come out of this. Well, you know, I mean, maybe I could give him a pass if he's working on, you know, organized crime division or behavioral science. But no, he was the guy that was supposed to interview Hillary Clinton. Now, a little bit more background on this. Comey said in his interview in this report, they said, look, this is pretty much true. We had already made up our mind. There was no way that we were going to press for an indictment on this. So she was off the hook. The only thing that would make her, the only thing that would make it to where we would do anything and indict was if we could prove that she was lying, that she had told a lie in this. Now, in this interview, the same guy that showed bias, he asked her a question. He said, you know, did you ever know that that these were classified? And she goes, no, didn't know it. So he pushed back. And basically, the OIG, you know, admitted he had to push back because the prosecutors were standing over his shoulder and they would have dinged him if he wouldn't have. So he slides an email across the table to her and says, what's this? On this email is, in parentheses, a C. It's very obvious what that C is. If you have ever looked at a classified document, you know what that C stands for. It stands for confidential. Hillary Clinton has been looking at these things since the early 90s. She knows exactly what this was. Her response to that was, I had no idea what that was. I thought maybe, you know, these paragraphs were just organized in alphabetical order, and this is paragraph C. It was the most ridiculous and hilarious response, and the FBI agent, who had been caught for bias and messaging, acknowledged that. He was like, I can't remember the direct quote, but he was like, I filed that in the you know, in my brain as, you know, one of the biggest, you know, bullcrap statements or something like that. So they caught her in a lie. They caught her in
an important lie.
The lie that probably would have meant that they said, okay, we can't now say that she didn't have the intent. This goes to prove intent. But what did they do? Not a thing. They let her go. Just insane. So at the end of this, the OIG was like, okay, so again, to reiterate, we can't prove bias, but it's incredibly hard to prove bias, more or less.
Well, that's particularly interesting in the context of the Mueller investigation, of what we know so far, right? The indictments of people like Papadopoulos, and even Flynn, people who were, you know, in getting in trouble solely because they lied to the FBI. I mean, that's what they got convicted for. And so it's interesting in that that's all she did, right? She just lied to the FBI. Now, maybe that's not a provable lie. I guess you'd have to have evidence of her knowing. But, I mean, everybody on earth knows that Hillary Clinton knows what a classified... She's the Secretary of freaking State, let alone what the 90s. I mean, when she obviously got, you know, had some, you know, parallel sort of information here that might she may have stumbled upon. But she was the Secretary of State and a U.S. Senator. Of course she knows this. So that's kind of interesting in context of maybe they're... This is a good point for the Trump people who are saying, like, look, they're not being fair in the Mueller investigation. If you apply the same standard that they're applied to Papadopoulos, right, you probably have to do something to her.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
So here is you know, what you kind of walk away with. The Clintons have been doing this for a very long time, and they know how to pull these heists. They know how to stay away from trouble. It's hard to prove bias, but it's also hard not to see it and recognize it. But to prove it in a court of law is different. This is exactly why the founders said we have to, even if we think that they're being malicious and they're making things up, we have to stand by people's right for free speech and a free press, because there are many things that you cannot prove. This is one of them. If we didn't have freedom of the press, assuming they did their job, if we didn't have freedom of the press, I couldn't get on the radio today and say, this is clearly bias. This is clearly corrupt, because the government could then hold me responsible for saying that when they just had an IG report that said there is no political bias. Well, no, we're reading between the lines. You're saying legally you can't prove it, but you're also sending the message. I mean, it's hard to come up with any other thing other than political bias.
We're going to see, I think there's multiple OIG investigations that are going to come off of this. They acknowledged one when they talked about they were looking at all the different leakers that were involved here. And they were basically said that, like, there's so many leakers in the FBI that we've started another investigation because it's a huge deal within the Bureau. And they said that they identified numerous agents across multiple different areas within the Bureau that had personal relationships with reporters, that they had received gifts.
This is disturbing.
This is insane. Like, they received sporting tickets, golf outings, high priced meals, invitations to non-public social events. I mean, we haven't heard the last of this. This one might be a 800-page OIG report that I'm probably going to end up having to read.
Remember, though, what's interesting is if you remember what we went through with the Secret Service under Obama, it was shown to be completely out of control mm-hmm. and corrupt. I don't think we ever really fixed that, did we? Did we ever really fix that? Was there ever really a hard tree shaking of the Secret Service?
Not that we heard of.
Yeah, not that I know of. And now we're seeing this infection in the FBI, which you can't have that in a police organization. We must clean this up.
Right. And these are people, right? They're people that are flawed. And people that can learn lessons, right? It's not just that you don't want that in the FBI. You don't want it anywhere. And here's a great example. A great lesson is spoken here. Peter Strzok hates Donald Trump. He's against him the entire time. He's the lead investigator in these cases. He comes out, and the only time they really... Not the only time. There's a lot of accusation. It's hints at bias. But the most concrete hint at bias in the entire report is a decision Peter Strzok made about Anthony Weiner's computer.
This is insane.
The computer comes in late September. I think it was 29th or 26th, something like that.
Yeah.
Comes in. They find out about it from New York. This is where all the emails are. New York says, hey, there's a bunch of emails on here. Might be pertinent to your investigation. The IG report says basically, they hint at, Strzok basically made the decision to prioritize Russia over the Weiner laptop. Mm-hmm. Okay. So instead of responding in a timely manner and following up on this lead, they push that one to the background. He's going after Russia the whole time. So he's used his bias in this situation to manipulate multiple government investigations. It's a huge deal. So he waits and waits and waits and waits. Well, what happens is that eventually New York, the state of New York, Hillary Clinton's state where she was a senator, follows up and says, hey, are you guys ever going to do anything about this Weiner computer? That's a month later. So instead of the entire investigation coming out a week before and Comey sending the letter alerting the nation that there's an ongoing FBI investigation of Hillary Clinton 10 days before the election, instead, as Comey hints to in his testimony, I would have probably not told Congress if we had started in September. Because if we started in September, we would have had enough time to go through the emails and we would have had an idea. If there was something bad in there, we could have told people. But if there wasn't, which is what they wound up finding, nothing, then they could have easily not told Congress about it. So in a way, his bias, right, results in Donald Trump becoming president, or at the very least making his road a much easier to become president. Yes. And that it's a nice lesson to learn when you want to throw your principles out to get some short-term end. This guy may have might be responsible for Donald Trump being president. And that's from the IG report. I mean, it's not a crazy diagonal curved line to get there. It's a pretty straight line. And, you know, it's a good lesson, because you might as well just do the thing that you know is right and let the chips fall where they may, instead of trying to manipulate the world.
All right. Back in just a second with more on the IG report. First, we want to thank our sponsor. It's FilterBy. If you own your own home, you have a air conditioning unit that is just working overtime. I cannot even imagine what the air conditioning bill is going to be like this month for this building. Because we are trying to bring the temperatures down in this whole building, and our HVAC system is just on overload. It is so hot here in Texas. Well, the one thing we have to have are clean filters. You need them at your home, too. If you don't have a clean filter, all of the air that is being sucked into your HVAC system, it's clogging up because it's pulling all the pollens and everything else out of the air, and that filter, man, you pull that out, your HVAC system is running hotter and harder because it's trying to suck air through that thing. So you need filters, and you need them to be replaced, but I never remember to do them. This is why FilterBy is really, really good. They have over 600 sizes. They ship for free within 24 hours. They're all made right here in America, and they also have auto delivery. That way you never forget to change your filters. And they knock 5% off the order just for making your life a little bit easier. So save time, save money, breathe better with FilterBy. That's FilterBuy.com. FilterBuy.com. So let me go to Jason, who read almost all of the IG report. So you didn't have to.
If you round up, you read almost all of it.
Yeah. Well, he glanced at the last, about 200 pages, but he read over 300 pages. So
he read more than any human being should have to endure.
Yes. Jason, what do we expect to come from this? Are they going to charge anybody with anything?
Well, I think that McCabe was vindicated a little bit on this. So I had never heard this before, but apparently McCabe, when he was called out for, his wife receiving campaign donations,
yes,
he went straight to the ethics board or whatever at the FBI and said, hey, this could be a problem. So I'm getting all my cards out on the table. So it looks really good for him. Problem is, the FBI basically screwed him. They said, nah, no problem. There's no optics issue with that whatsoever. There's no problem whatsoever. So he continued on with doing his thing. So he's vindicated in that. However, the issue is he lied to the FBI director, and he lied when he talked about trying to cover up and leak afterwards. That's where he got in trouble. So maybe a little bit vindicated, but still getting in trouble for that. I think that there's going to be a lot more investigation looking into Strzok and what he did during the Russia investigation. They are very heavy-handed on, coming out and saying, look, we can't prove what they did affected this investigation, although read between the lines, it kind of seemed like it did, like the laptop. But they keep on talking about all this pertaining to the Russia investigation. They mentioned that multiple times. This is a direct quote that I copied down about how bad it was. They said that Strzok's comments and texts were not only indicative of a biased state of mind, but even more seriously, implies a willingness to take official action to impact the presidential candidate's electoral prospects.
It's amazing.
That's huge.
I mean, can you imagine, honestly, can you imagine if Trump lost?
Oh,
imagine,
my gosh.
Imagine this report after Trump loses. Maybe you're right.
I don't think it would have come out. If Trump would have lost, Clinton would have had every reason to bury this information.
Yeah. I mean, because this is, we can look at this in an interesting way of people should be punished for their past actions and everything else. But, I mean, in reality, he wound up winning anyway, so it didn't affect the election. Imagine if it did. I mean, that this would have sounded like an Alex Jones conspiracy theory. But, I mean, here it is. I mean, the lead investigator was trying to do this.
I think this would have been Hillary Clinton's Russia investigation.
When you go to buy a car, and you ever walk into, like, a car dealership and you realize you have the really, like, terrible car salesman with you, and you just want to change, but at that point, you know they're on commission, so they're, like, locked into you, and it's a real pain. You just want to get to the right person, someone who knows what they're talking about, that knows and will be honest with you about whether this is a good car or not, whether this is a good deal or not. Everyone needs to make sure that a transaction goes well for both sides, and you need to have the right person handling that transaction for you. Well, you know, it's different with a real estate agent because you can choose whoever you want. You don't have to get stuck with the person who walks up to you when you walk in the door. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com is a website you can go to. They've got over 1,200 agents there. They've been screened from all of their results in the past, their advertising, how their reputations are in the community. And you can pick a great agent in your town really fast. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. Go there now if you're looking to buy or sell a home. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com.
There's a couple of things that we need to talk about. Mike Lee really needs your support. By the way, did you see that Mike Lee is being considered for the next appointee for Supreme Court Justice? Would that not be outrageously great?
That would be fantastic. Although that was kind of rumored earlier. And his brother was on the initial list,
yes,
wasn't it?
Yes. But apparently Mike is now becoming popular in Washington, and he may be on the list to be Supreme Court Justice, which would be unbelievable, just unbelievable.
Yeah,
hopefully we have the votes to get that passed in the next half term.
I mean, look, they're always going to say whoever's appointed is going to be problematic. However, Mike, if there's anybody who can get through a tough Senate hearing, it's Mike Lee. He's not going to have a problem with that.
Yeah, and he's not partisan. He's just constitutional.
Yep.
Period.
And he's also, impossibly clean. does not make mistakes with his language. He is very precise.
And it's
very difficult to.
And what's great is the Senate probably would rather have him out. The Senate would probably be like, oh, just please get this guy out. He's always talking about the Constitution. Now we have to play by the rules. Have you seen what's happening? He did. I just read this on his Facebook page last night. Here's the latest development in the unfolding saga of the yet to be passed Due Process Guaranteed Act. Now, you wouldn't think we would need an act of Congress to guarantee due process. The Republicans and Democrats voted yesterday to let this proposal receive a vote, easily defeating a motion to table. In light of that outcome, I asked unanimous consent for roll call vote. One member of the Senate, my colleague Lindsey Graham from South Carolina, objected to that reasonable request, explaining that he's not only unwilling to support the measure, which is his right, but he is unwilling to even let his Senate colleagues vote on the measure. His position is a curious one, given that the overwhelming majority of senators want a vote on this proposal, especially considering that Senator Graham himself voted for a nearly identical version of this amendment 6 years ago. I respectfully but strongly implore Senator Graham to change his mind. Let us vote to protect due process in America. Let us condemn indefinite detentions of Americans apprehended on American soil. Let us vote. So what this means is they can take, this is against everything in the Bill of Rights. Everything. If you're apprehended here, you can't. Where do I even start? This goes back to the basic. This is the liberty part in the Declaration of Independence. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. What does liberty mean? It means, and the way they were talking about it, is that the king cannot come into your house and just take you. Now, that's what happens in communist countries and a lot of other countries. They don't have to charge you. They can come and take you in for questioning, and then you're just disappeared. and nobody knows what happened to you. You didn't have a trial. They didn't charge you. And your family is like, what the hell happened to them? We can't talk about that. And neither can you. This is the life liberty part before the pursuit of happiness. You cannot do it. You must have due process. I don't know what Lindsey Graham is thinking, but he is not thinking about the Bill of Rights. If someone is picked up here in American soil, they must have due process. This goes to the government just coming in and taking your money. How many cases are we watching on this?
No, a ton. I mean, it's a huge problem. And we're not even scratching the surface on it yet.
No, it's civil asset forfeiture, which means they can come in and they're doing it everywhere. And I'm telling you, as these cities and states become more and more desperate to meet their bills, they are just going to start taking it because they can. They will say, well, we had, for instance, the one guy that I know that ran his own store. He was told by the bank, don't make deposits over $10,000 because then you're going to be put on a list. Okay, so he would go to the bank every day and he would make a deposit and it was always under $10,000. Well, that marked him for suspicious activity because why is it always just under 10 grand? Well, because that's what the bank told him to do. They came in, they took his money. No due process. He had no money left. No bank account, nothing. And no due process. They didn't even charge him with anything. We know of another guy that was walking through the airport.
Yeah, that was another one where he was bringing his money back to his home country because he was going to help some family members.
He'd lived here forever.
He had lived here for over 20 years, something like that.
Yeah,
saved up over $50,000. Was going to help, and it was a Croatian. I think he was Croatian, maybe. Whatever it was,
Latvian.
Perhaps
I think it was Latvian.
Whatever it was, he was not confident in the banking system to be able to send his money, so he decided to just bring it with him and carry it on the plane,
which is legal.
Which is legal. It's your money
as long as you declare it.
So he's leaving the country and they stop him, take his money, don't charge him with anything, and he still doesn't have his money. And his entire life savings, they just took it from him because they thought, I don't know, this doesn't seem right. And they didn't actually have anything on him at all. And then now they're just still holding his money. It's been weeks and weeks and weeks. We talked about Chicago as well as on this. Amazing what they're doing in Chicago right now. Listen to this story. This is a guy, Spencer Bird. This happened in 2016. He's been fixing cars since he was 16 years old. Sometimes he did service cars and would give clients rides when he couldn't repair their cars on the spot. One night, he's giving a client, a man he's never met before, a ride in his car, Cadillac DeVille. Police pulled them both over. They searched the car. What they find is the mechanic, Bird, he's completely clean, didn't do anything wrong. But the passenger... what he's carrying in his pocket was a bag of heroin the size of a tennis ball. Okay.
Wow.
No one's accusing the mechanic of having anything to do with this. He was giving a ride to someone who happened to be carrying heroin. What they did is they took his car, the mechanic's car. Now, again, he's a mechanic. He probably needs his car to be able to shuttle people around like this. They've taken his car. They've impounded it. They are holding it and holding it and holding it. Then they start charging him storage fees. Storage fees on top of storage fees on top of storage fees. Plus penalties on top of penalties on top of penalties. He can't get his car back. He now owes the city more than the entire car is worth. So with the exception of legal proceedings, the sensible decision is to just give it up. Let the city have the car. And this is happening over and over and over again. And why is Chicago doing it? Because they're trying to pay down their bills. They're trying to screw every citizen they can because their balance sheet is so screwed up from years and years and years of progressivism that they're just taking people's money and taking people's property to try to get as close as they can to breaking even.
So here's the thing. Without due process, you don't have a chance. Look at the hoops that they are jumping through for the politicians in Washington, D.C. Look at the hoops that they are jumping through to prove that Hillary Clinton did no wrong. They give her every opportunity and every opportunity to just clearly lie. Oh, I didn't know what that C meant. You were a senator.
Secretary of State.
Secretary of State. And was in the White House for years. You're telling me you didn't know that that C stood for classified? Clearly, that's a lie. However, what did they say? The inspector general comes out and says, we cannot prove it. We suspect it. It seems obvious, but we cannot prove it. So we have to move on. Now, nobody feels like that's justice. But is it justice that the ruling class has a separate standard that all of a sudden they get the benefit of the doubt? But you're a guy who's a mechanic. You're giving a guy a ride home because his car is in your shop and you are paid, or you have to pay the penalty that you lose your car? Due process. If we do not have due process, we are done as a country. That is not hyperbole. There is nothing left. Life, liberty, and property. Due process protects all three of those. And Lindsey Graham doesn't want a straight up or down vote to protect due process. You need to call your senator and you need to tell them you must vote for due process. You need to call and write or whatever, Facebook post, Lindsey Graham. Americans don't stand in the way of protecting due process. What Mike Lee is trying to do is to reassemble the Bill of Rights, to put new safeguards around it, because it's just being dismantled piece by piece. Tell Lindsey Graham, sit down. You can vote against it because you don't believe in it, but you don't have a right to sit and block a vote of due process in the United States Senate. It's critical. Do it today. I want to thank our sponsor this half hour, which is Mercury Real Estate. Thanks for making this part of the program possible. According to Redfin, homes sold faster than ever in April 2018. Prices are up 7.6%. That's a new median high of $302,200. Now, this is the first time the national median home price has surpassed $300,000. Now, for most Americans, their home is their biggest investment, the biggest investment you're ever going to make. And you got to do the right thing. You got to, if you're thinking about selling, now is the time to sell it and get that investment money out. We have over 1,000 agents all over America who are just like you. They're hardworking. They like a square deal. They want to make sure that they do the right thing. They're fully vetted, handpicked by my team for their knowledge and their skill and their track record. It's vital that they know what your house is worth in your area. It's vital that they are the best in your area. Thousands of families have already put realestateagentsitrust.com to the test, and the results are pretty remarkable, but find out for yourself. Check them out now at realestateagentsitrust.com. That's realestateagentsitrust.com.
Looking for a great Father's Day present? Then bring the whole family to the Rights and Responsibilities exhibition presented by the Mercury Museum. Take a glimpse of what the world was like before men had rights and tyrants ruled. Join us Father's Day weekend, June 15th through the 17th, here at Mercury Studios in Dallas. Get your tickets at mercuryone.org/museum2018.
All right, so Stu would like to tell us who gay people are.
Yay!
Which I think is an interesting choice, with a career choice, really.
I think it is. It's very interesting to dive into this. We actually have Brad Palumbo coming up, who happens to be gay, in hour three, and he wants to talk about the Masterpiece Cake Shop ruling and whether that's okay. I think it's It is interesting to hear, I think, the perspective is. Because I think what happens in the media is, I've had people tell me before, there are absolutely no gay people mm-hmm. who agree with you on gay rights issues. And you think that's kind of how the media presents it, right? I don't think that's actually true. Listen to the profile. They just did a poll of LGBTQ. Who are LGBTQ? This one was fascinating to me, completely separate from politics.
Okay.
Give me a breakdown of percentage-wise, your guess on LGB. Okay, lesbian, gay, bisexual. What's the breakdown percentage-wise of those three groups?
What do you mean? What is it?
Okay, there's 100% would be all of them.
All of them.
What's the breakdown between the three groups, L, G, and B? Lesbian, gay, bisexual.
It would be maybe 40, 40, 10.
And 10 being?
Bisexual.
Bisexual. Here's the actual breakdown. 16% lesbian.
What?
32% gay. 46% bisexual. They're Wait. The largest group by far. B is the biggest.
You mean in real life or in this club?
Out of LGB people, out of those people, lesbian, gay, and bisexual.
Okay, so this is not talking
46%.
About the, this is not talking about the people who are activist in that. You're talking about just percentage of all Americans who are...
Yeah, that's a poll of
yeah,
people.
Okay, that yeah. makes sense. I thought you meant about the activist involved. Sorry.
No, that's all right. How about marriage? 39% say they either don't want to get married or are unsure if they ever want to get married. 39%. So we hear this whole thing about, you know, how important of a right that was. There's a lot of people who have no interest in it.
I know that from my own life. Of course. People are saying, I know plenty of gay people who say, why would I want to do marriage? I mean, it doesn't seem to do you guys any good. You keep getting divorced. We're fine.
I guess maybe the same with children.
Yeah.
Because you hear about like adoption and everything. 62% either don't want children or are not sure that they ever want to have children. And the biggest group is, I don't want children, 44%.
Wow.
Which is a large amount. I thought this was somewhat self-evident, but bisexual people are having more sex than their gay and lesbian peers.
You've doubled the chances of who you can have sex
Surprisingly,
with.
Surprisingly, it's 29% of bisexual people having sex once or twice a week. 15% several times a week, a lot higher than gay and bisexual. Well, you're doubling the amount of available people. But yeah, it's kind of an interesting... By the way, 36% either moderate or conservative. 36%.
Glenn Beck.
So several months ago at the Miss Universe competition, two women took a selfie and then posted it on Instagram. The caption read, "Peace and love." As a result of that selfie, both women have faced death threats now. One of the women, along with her entire family, had to flee her home country. The occasion was the 2017 Miss Universe competition, which I think is a little arrogant of all of us Earthlings, but that's another story. The women were Miss Iraq and Miss Israel. Miss Iraq is no longer welcome in her own country. The government threatened to strip her of her crown. Of course, she was also, badgered for wearing a bikini during a competition. I mean, that's kind of what Miss Universe is. And if you didn't like bikinis, why does anybody in Iraq know about the Miss Universe competition? I'm just saying, it seems like you might be watching it. Anyway, in an interview, Miss Iraq, Sarah Iden, said, "When I posted the picture, I didn't think for a second that there'd be any blowback. I woke up to calls from my family and the Miss Iraq organization going insane, and the death threats I got online were scary. The director of the Miss Iraq organization called me and said that they were getting heat from the ministry. He said, I have to take down the picture or they will strip me of my title." Well, yesterday, Miss Iraq, Sarah Iden, posted another selfie. This time, did she learn her lesson? She posed in another selfie with Miss Israel during a visit to Jerusalem. In an interview, she said, "I don't think that Iraq and Israel are enemies. I think maybe the governments are enemies with each other. And there's a lot of Iraqi people, though, that don't have a problem with Israelis. This, of course, is quite an understatement. Iraq, home to roughly 15,000 Palestinians, refused to acknowledge Israel as a legitimate country. As it is, technically, they are at war with Israel. The adage says that the picture is worth a thousand words. But what do we do when those thousand words are all hateful and deadly? How can we find the goodness in such bad situations?
It's Friday, June 15th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program, Mr. Bill O'Reilly, the author of the upcoming book, Killing the SS, The Hunt for the Worst War Criminals in History. Hello, Bill. How are you?
Beck, I'm good. Thank you for asking. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's not like I really cared, but I thought I would ask because it sounds polite.
No, I know. I mean, but right. Just the fact that you made the effort.
Yeah, I know. Thank you for recognizing that. Now, Bill, I wanted to talk to you about a couple of things. Let's start with the OIG report.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts?
Well, I'm not surprised. There were a couple of headlines that we spotlighted on BillO'Reilly.com. The first one is that the FBI and the Justice Department held back that key memo, the headline of the whole story, where Peter Strzok, the lead FBI agent on the Hillary Clinton email thing, and in the beginning on the Trump-Russian collusion thing, sent to his mistress, an FBI lawyer named Lisa Page, that we would prevent Donald Trump from becoming president after Ms. Page, semi-hysterical, said, oh, he's not going to get elected, is he? That's the headline. That's the big smoking gun. I didn't expect a smoking gun, but there it is. But that memo should have been out a long time ago because congressional investigators asked for the correspondence between Page and Strzok. They held it back. Why? Because the FBI and the Justice Department knew what a damning thing that would be. But if you listen to the media last night, the hate Trump media, that was buried. But that is the big headline of the whole thing.
What, did you get the impression that the Inspector General was also saying, of course there was political influence. We just can't prove it. It's really hard to prove. But look, I'm going to spend 600 pages on something that if there was nothing there, I would have done it in 20. But you need to know all of the details and you judge for yourself.
I didn't like the report. I thought the report was sloppy and I thought the report was misleading. I'd like to talk to Horowitz and interview him about it. And the two things I didn't like about the report. Number one, he was very generous to James Comey, extremely generous by saying, well, we didn't find any bias in James Comey's activities, but we found that he did all of these other things wrong. He was arrogant. He was defiant. He went outside of Justice Department guidelines. He blah, 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 blah. But we didn't find any bias in that. So then the logical question that a six-year-old would ask would be, why did James Comey do all of this?
Well, but don't you think that's what he was trying to say when he says
it?
Well, because
go ahead.
He said in the report,
yes,
it's very difficult, if not impossible, to prove political bias. And I think that they were just there's
then
all smoke there.
Just leave it there.
He did.
But no, he didn't. He said that we couldn't find any political bias in James Comey's behavior. And that was what the hate Trump media latched onto. That was the first thing that CNN reported and the New York Times and the Washington Post, the usual suspects.
Bloomberg as well. Yeah.
Look, there's a discipline that should be applied to these kinds of extremely important documents. And I did not see that discipline in Michael Horowitz's end product. And why should it be applied? Because this is extremely important to every American citizen.
Why?
Most of us, you go out today to the mall and you go, hey, did you read the Inspector General's report? These people are going to look at you like, okay? And it's becoming even more deranged in this country where people just don't pay attention. So why is it important to every American citizen? Because you have the premier and most powerful law enforcement organization rife with corruption, and that's the FBI. And there's no doubt about it. When you have your lead investigator on Hillary Clinton email and Russian collusion, a guy who was hired by Special Prosecutor Mueller to come on over, a guy who co-authored James Comey's public statement, first public statement exonerating Hillary Clinton. When you have that man showing the malice that he showed toward Donald Trump, that is corruption at the highest level. And this is the FBI.
So what was the Attorney General's motivation for not just going after them, other than he couldn't prove it?
What do you mean, the Inspector General?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, not the AG, the IG.
The Attorney General?
Yeah.
I don't know if you know Sessions even knows that this is out yet, by the way. He's down in Muscle Beach, down in the Redneck Riviera.
Right.
You know, where's Sessions? Where is he? The guy is just unbelievable. I mean, you should. Gomer Pyle could do it.
All right.
Okay. Where is the man, Dak?
So
where is he?
What is the motivation of the IG?
I don't know, other than the fact that it is becoming clear that the Justice Department is just like every other government department.
Of course it is.
Full of bureaucrats who want to cover their butts.
It was disturbing to me to see in the report that it seems to be a little rampant of the FBI agents themselves taking all kinds of favors from members of the press.
No, I know. It's so outrageous. They expose that the FBI rank and file now. The agents involved in investigations have all these cozy relationships and are going to ball games and getting dinners and going out drinking with the press. And the press, of course, is getting these leaks. And that's why we have anarchy in Washington, D.C. It's not just the FBI. It's almost every federal agency leaking to the press, selective leaks that the press doesn't care to follow up on. They just print them. They don't know if it's true. They don't know why it's being leaked. They just say, here it is. Here's the headline. We don't care if it's true. We're not going to take the time to find out. And so this is another part of the corruption that has just enveloped Washington, D.C.
Do you think, Bill, as we're on the road to, I think, a banana republic, if you can't trust your justice system, then you really don't have anything.
There is no justice system anymore. You ask anybody who's been into civil court, and you ask anybody who's gotten a beef, who's been sued by somebody maliciously, you ask anybody, you have to rack up hundreds of thousands of dollars to just be represented. What kind of justice system is that? You have to wait years. You're smeared if this gets out to the press. It's no justice system. But here's what's even worse. I think that Peter Strzok committed crimes. And that's what we did last night on the No Spin News. We brought in a former U.S. attorney, Brett Tallman, who's probably the smartest guy in the country on this. And I said, this looks like a conspiracy. This looks like a conspiracy. You can charge this guy, Strzok, and perhaps Lisa Page, with a crime. All right, but who's going to investigate it? So Horowitz refers five FBI agents to disciplinary action. Well, who's going to investigate that? Mm-hmm. Other FBI agents? Who's going to do that? If you look at what Strzok did throughout the whole investigation, again, this is the top guy at the FBI investigating Hillary and Trump collusion, okay? If you look at what he did behind the scenes and how he maneuvered, things that, well, we're not going to say this, we are going to say that. Mm-hmm. They held back the Hillary Clinton thing for almost a month when the stuff was discovered on Wiener's computer. Okay, that's a crime. Well, who's going to investigate Strzok? Who? That's how bad it is. You talk about a banana republic. Who's going to do it? So we got another special prosecutor. Oh, my God. Who wants another special prosecutor?
So Bill, here at the Mercury Studios, we're doing this museum, and it's all on the Bill of Rights, and we're showing the pieces from history that kind of explain the Bill of Rights and explain when we go wrong. But it starts with the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident. This, what's really run through my mind in the last few weeks is, first of all, they're not self-evident. They have to be taught. If they're taught for generations, then they become self-evident. But as soon as they start to be decayed, you're taught something different, that somebody else is in control. I keep thinking of the line from, I think it was John Adams that said, you know, the system that we have is built for a religious and moral people. Without that, this system is wholly inadequate. We're no longer people who say, no, you know, that's unethical. I'm not going to do that. No, I'm not going to do this. We're now a people who's like, I don't care. Everybody's doing it. Are we able to rule ourselves anymore?
Oh boy, Beck. That's philosophical. Jeez.
I'm going to give you, I tell you what, I'm going to take a pause. Give you a chance just to think about that.
I've got to call some people to get an answer.
Yeah, you call
a lifeline.
Yeah, you need a lifeline. You call somebody, and then we'll get your answer here in just a second. Like he's not a deep thinker at all. All right, thanks, Bill. Hang on just a sec. We'll back in a second. First, I want to tell you about our sponsor. Thanks so much to ZipRecruiter. They know that hiring is a challenge, but there is one place where you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. It's a place where growing businesses can connect to qualified candidates, and that place is ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. They have a powerful matching technology that scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply for your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates, so you're not going to miss the best matches. ZipRecruiter, so effective, 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in the first day. ZipRecruiter, it's why they're the highest rated hiring site in America. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. The smartest way to hire. Mr. Bill O'Reilly, we are a nation that doesn't seem to care about the truth anymore. We don't know how to find the truth. We don't know how to think. More and more millennials now believe that they are going to retire at 55 and they are higher in debt. There's no common sense. There's no common decency anymore. Can Americans rule themselves anymore?
Well, I'd have to say yes. I mean, I can't bail on the country per se. I think that there is a strain of common sense among Americans over 35. I think that gap now, it used to be because during World War II, I mean, you had 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds fighting for their lives in defense of their country, and they had to grow up real fast. And same thing in the Depression, they had to grow up. You know, when you were 16, you were a man or a woman. Mm-hmm. Now it's these people are sloppy and they're, you know, lazy. I'm generalizing. There are certainly some very, very good millennials. But the schools don't challenge them. The parents are on machines 24/7 themselves. They're not paying attention to them. There's no moral core. Religion has declined drastically in the country. There's no discipline across the board.
Jeez.
It takes them a while to you know, figure it out. But it is troubling that the truth really doesn't matter because it's your truth. And you see this now in all kinds of public pronouncements. I'm going to tell you my truth. No. There's the truth and then there's deception. It's not your truth. You can basically present an argument that can be overwhelming in the sense that this did happen and we have to accept that. And if you don't want to accept it, that's not your truth. You're a moron, and you're deceiving yourself. So I don't want to have anything to do with you. Right, but that's being embraced as a legitimate point of view.
I was just looking for a yes or no on that.
Oh, you were. I'm sorry. I didn't want to confuse you. But I did call my friend Plato.
You did?
Yeah, in the break.
Right.
And then to try to get a philosophical view that I just imparted.
Yeah, you just like to take the top off of Plato and smell it. I know.
Oh, my God.
So, so Bill, let's spend a couple of seconds. You know what? I want to go to the summit when we have a little more time after the break. So let me start with this. Looks like the trade war with China is getting really serious.
Yeah.
A new tariff going in. 25% tariff on China. They say they're going to respond. Is this helping us? Is this going to get things?
Depends if the deal is made, which I think it will be. I think the Chinese opened it up with, we'll buy $90 billion more American goods a year, and Trump wants it to be $150, and I think that's what this is all about. I don't want a trade war. That's ridiculous. And, you know, when you call for Chinese takeout now, it's twice as much as it was. And that's not right. That's wrong. That's painful. No,
I think that's just for you.
Oh.
It's Bill O'Reilly's house. Charge him twice. Charge him double.
It's a tariff.
Right.
Well, but real tariffs have been put on, for example, on washing machines, Bill. And so now they're saying their highest prices they've ever been. They're up 17%.
Yeah.
So now we have real Americans, the folks, paying 17% more for washing machines.
Why would you buy that washing machine? Buy one from Portugal.
Well, because there's tariffs.
Chinese washing machine.
There's tariffs on all the washing machines coming in now because the Obama administration tried to tariff Korea, South Korea, and Mexico. So they moved it to Thailand. Then they did it to Thailand. Now they're doing it to everyone. So now they're all having to pay more. And the folks are getting hit with 17% more cost. And it's just funneling into a niche industry here where it's costing hundreds of thousands of dollars per job. It makes no sense. And this is not a negotiation. It's been going on, and it started, to Trump's credit, it started with Obama. Obama started with it, and now Trump's continuing it. Isn't it just a bad idea to tax people who should be able to keep their own money?
Listen, I don't know anything about the washing machines, but I do believe what you say, Stu.
Thank you.
So I'm basically taking my wash out to the brook and pounding it with rocks this afternoon. I mean, I'm fighting back. I'm not going to take this. That's what I'm doing.
All right.
That's
you want to play that
Bill O'Reilly
clown?
Ejector
okay.
Seat. Yes. So that was okay.
All right. When we come back, I'm sure you have a lot to say about Donald Trump and Kim Jong Un.
Yeah.
And I'd like to hear your digest, if you will, of that. But I also want to make sure that we hit a couple things. What the president said about Kim Jong-un and how he rules his people. And he's a strong leader. And when he talks, people sit up and listen. And, quote, I'd like our people to do that as well. We'll get Bill O'Reilly's take in a minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Well, every week we spend an hour with Mr. Bill O'Reilly, so you don't have to. just get his opinions on the goings-on. Around the world.
And it's a big weekend this weekend with the museum going on right now. You can go to mercury1.org/museum2018 to get your tickets. There's you can take a tour of the entire museum. Went through the whole thing yesterday. It's incredible. You have access to documents. You could put the, you know, in the plastic sheets, but they're right in your hands, and you can read the documents from the founders. It's really incredible. Plus, all sorts of really dark stuff from the Soviets and from the Chinese regime and all sorts of different eras of history, as well as the Nazis. If only we had an expert on, let's say, the SS, who maybe wrote an entire book, Killing the SS, that's coming out soon. If only we had someone like that.
We'll try to find him. Right now we're talking to Bill O'Reilly. By the way, we're going to open the case. The Gettysburg Address came yesterday.
Did you lose the key?
No, it was not. It didn't arrive.
It didn't
arrive, Federal Express. And it was it came separately. And we called yesterday and we're like, the key hasn't arrived. And they're like, uh-oh. It's supposed to be here at 10:30 today. If it's not, think of this. We have to call a locksmith to open up the case with the Gettysburg Address in it. I mean, what locksmith wouldn't? I mean, it's like you're in a movie. I broke the lock to get the Gettysburg Address.
Okay, you're in a national treasure with Nicolas Cage.
Right. So anyway, we're going to open that live, hopefully, at 12 o'clock Eastern time
today
on
there.
Facebook.
It would really suck if we opened it up and there
wasn't there.
Inside.
Yeah. It's like Geraldo's vault. Anyway, Bill O'Reilly, welcome back to the program. Let's talk a little bit about what happened with Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, I wrote a column on it, of course, on BillO'Reilly.com, and it basically was a very big victory for Donald Trump because he was able to show the world that, look, we'd like to have peace. We'd like to negate this guy. We'd like him to cooperate with us. And so I'm going to do whatever I can to make that happen, and that includes actually complimenting this jerk. So I think most non-Trump hating people understand that was a positive, not just for the United States, but for the world. So, you know, it's interesting to see the reaction to Trump, but he gets a big win out of that.
So, Bill, I think you know Donald Trump. I've met him a couple of times, and I don't, you know, it's not like... it's not like we're friends.
He doesn't like you, Becky.
Yes.
He doesn't like you.
Yes. Okay, so...
Join the club, right?
Yeah. Wait a minute. Hang on just a sec. So, do you believe, because I do, do you believe he is... he's self-aware enough to know, I recognize this guy. I see, you know, that he is, I see his want for fame and power. And I know that if I carry a big stick, but then I say, come on into the circle, he's going to want to be into that circle. Is he self-aware enough to know that that's kind of his MO and it will work on somebody like Kim Jong-un?
Well, he's got a pattern of negotiation that he uses, flattery, threats. It's not sophisticated, but he's worked well for him. So he uses that. And, you know, in this case, he threatened the little rocket man, diminished him. And then, you know, by back channels, China said, look, you know, you want things to get better, we can do that too, and I'll prop them up. So the little rocket man said, you know what, I'm going to try this, and we'll see how it works out. But is he self-aware? Yes. Trump is self-aware in the sense that he has a way to operate that's worked for him in the past, and he continues to do it now. Now, that if you take that into consideration, then your next question might be, and I don't want to tell you guys what to ask me, but then why would you go out this morning and say that Americans should sit up at attention when the president speaks, just like they do in North Korea?
Why would you go out this morning then and say the Americans should just stand up at attention like
King
Jong-un?
That was my next question.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Excellent question.
Thank you.
Because there's a lack of discipline on the part of Donald Trump that you and we talked about discipline of Michael Horowitz and the Inspector General's report. And again, that's very troubling to me because, you know, that's his job. And the report was so imprecise about why James Comey did what he did. But Donald Trump doesn't. He basically is a guy who acts on impulse. And you're the president now. He's the exact opposite of Barack Obama. Exactly. Obama never acted on impulse, ever. But Trump says, oh, there's Steve Ducey out on the front lawn of the White House. I'm going to go out and kick some butt rhetorically, which he did. And, you know, Trump doesn't even know what he's saying half the time. I you know, when I see all this, then you look at the reaction, MSNBC, I'm going, don't you realize that he just says stuff? Everybody knows people who just say stuff.
So that was the big discussion, and I couldn't take it from David Gregory this week on CNN with Mr. David Gregory. Look, I speak French, so I am smarter than you. David Gregory is like, this president, he just says things, but there is a responsibility, and we're not the enemy of the people. We're a bigger enemy than ISIS and Russia. I also had a problem with Wolf Blitzer saying, we're a bigger enemy than Russia, because they were mocking anyone who said Russia was an enemy before this president. You know, I just can't take it. However, I also do see that it's not good to have somebody who's just saying things and not meaning it.
The weakest part of the Trump administration is the president himself saying stupid stuff. Mm-hmm. It's as simple as that. If he would discipline his message, he would be 15 points up in the job approval rating and almost have a lockdown on reelection. But he is incapable of doing it, which makes him very amusing. One of the reasons that I got to know Donald Trump was because he and I would go to sporting events in New York City, we'd go to the Yankees, the Mets, the Knicks, whatever. And he was so outrageous, sitting next to him for 2 hours in the stream of conscious monologue was about the most entertaining thing that I could possibly imagine. And that's why I went. I mean, I went and I learned an amazing amount about what his business was, how he conducted it, and what he thought about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But he's totally uncensored. He always has been since he's been 1 year old and learned how to speak the language. Nobody's saying, Donald, you can't really say that. They're going, Donald, here's the gold card. Go out and do whatever you want. He's a rich guy. And rich guys have a tendency to spout, and he spouts. And, you know, the method to his madness is that he likes to drive people crazy.
Yes.
He likes that. That's fun for him. It's his hobby. What are Donald Trump's hobbies? Golf and driving people crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Those are his two hobbies.
Right.
And it helps to understand that so that the American people go, you know, so what? You know, when I hear this stuff about Trump saying this crazy stuff, I go, so what? So what? I mean, I don't care if he says that. It doesn't bother me if he wants people to sit up like they do in North Korea, because it's just he'll forget about it in an hour. And that's what I want to get across. It's about trying to get the country in a better place. All right. And on some things, he has improved the country dramatically, and on others, he hasn't.
Can we talk about some serious business, Bill, which is when do we get killing the SS? Why don't we have a copy yet?
Well, because the galleys, as you know, because Beck writes a book every year, and the galleys will be out, I think, in 10 days. It's a sharp-looking book. I designed the whole thing, as I always do.
Okay, hang on just a second. You know there are words in this book?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right, good.
But no, they're in French.
All right, well, when you're talking about a book and you're like, and I designed the whole thing.
Look at that. We'll make fun of the French. We have good mustard. You're going to really like this book because it's not the typical World War II book in the sense that, well, I knew that. There's a lot of new stuff in it. And the headline is that the Israeli government opened up stuff to us about the pursuit of SS war criminals like Eichmann and Mengele that they have never made public, that this has been secret stuff, classified stuff. We were able to get it. And therefore, we were able to walk you through how they got away after World War II. We believe Martin Bormann, second in command to Adolf Hitler, did get away, where the Allied propaganda and Russian propaganda was he was shot in Berlin. We don't believe that happened. And we present an unbelievably compelling case.
Do you make a case of where he might have gone?
Yes, Beck. We trace him to Bariloche, Argentina, and where do you see the evidence that we have? It is so unbelievable, some of the stuff that we found out, that people who are interested in the most evil acts ever perpetrated on this earth, and now kids don't know anything about it. You mentioned the Holocaust. They don't know what you're talking about. I'm hoping that this book galvanizes the country and the world. It's going to do very well overseas, and that people start the conversation again about evil. This is about evil, okay, and how evil is accepted in many quarters. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people that help these SS guys get away, and we name those people, and some of them will shock you.
Bill O'Reilly, always good to talk to you, sir.
Is it really, Beck?
No, it's not. Hey, what are you doing
I want your audience to just get the unfettered truth.
Yeah, what are you doing for Father's Day?
You know,
that is interesting.
On Eastern Long Island, most beautiful place in the summer, and I'm going to shake down the kids for presents.
You're going to shake down the kids? What are you hoping for? What does Bill O'Reilly want as a gift?
I want the children to act like they do in North Korea, sit up.
Bill O'Reilly, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay, guys.
All right, buddy. Bye-bye. Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. And his new book, Killing the SS, coming out. All right. I want to tell you about our sponsor this half hour. It's Casper. Now, imagine taking a car out for a 100-day test drive. I mean, that's how you know, you know, if you love it. Unfortunately, there would be a lot of people that would be returning the keys of that Ferrari. You know, going, I think I'm going to get a Hyundai instead. So they don't let you do that. Same with shoes. But Casper lets you do that with their 100-night sleep challenge. 100 nights in a Casper bed. Try it. Now, the reason why they do this is they know that you know, if you lay down, you know, for 20 minutes in a store, it's not the same as sleeping on a bed night after night after night. It will change the way your back feels, your body feels, and you sometimes will get a mattress and you'll be 10 days into it and you're like, oh, this sucks. The opposite happened to me. I put the new Casper mattress in my house. I had an old Casper mattress. I tried the new Casper. And I really didn't like it the first week. I didn't like it. And I was like, oh, good thing we saved the other one. I shipped this one back. In 10 days, I loved that mattress. It's something that you have to sleep on. And that's why they're giving you a 100-night sleep guarantee. Now, it'll ship to your door in a little teeny box. If you don't love it, you don't have to put it in the box. You just call them. They come and pick it up. When the choice is to test a mattress by actually sleeping on it for 100 nights in your home, there is no question. What I want you to do is go to Casper.com and use the promo code Beck. Casper.com, use the promo code Beck, and that way you'll save 50%, or sorry, it's $50 on select mattresses if you use the promo code Beck. Casper.com, terms and conditions do apply.
Looking for a great Father's Day present? Then bring the whole family to the Rights and Responsibilities exhibition presented by the Mercury Museum. Take a glimpse of what the world was like before men had rights and tyrants ruled. Join us Father's Day weekend, June 15th through the 17th, here at Mercury Studios in Dallas. Get your tickets at mercuryone.org/museum2018.
So last night we had, oh, I don't even know, about 400 people here last night. Some VIPs that came in to see the museum before we opened it up to the public. The people were a little surprised on how dark it is at the beginning. Cause we're showing you what life is not only like living under a tyrant in the past, but also what it's like currently living for a tyrant. It's a little dark. There is a pass-through if you don't want to bring your kids to that portion of it. You know, just depends on how sensitive they are. There's some pretty disturbing things in that opening few minutes of the museum. But it's great. We would love to have you here. One of the things that the VIPs didn't get to see last night, they saw a trunk that is all locked up that has been flown in from Illinois. And the key was supposed to arrive separately, so nobody had the key to the trunk and could open it. Unfortunately, we haven't found the key yet. And so one way or another, we're opening it at 11 o'clock today, whether it takes a locksmith or if the key arrives. We're opening up today, and that'll be 11 o'clock Central, 12 o'clock Eastern, and we'll do it on Facebook Live on both The Blaze and Glenn Beck. We're really excited. I mean, I can't imagine what it's going to be like to open up a trunk and reach in and pull the Gettysburg Address out. You know, the handwritten Abraham Lincoln Gettysburg Address.
Incredible.
Pretty incredible.
I mean, we've done these museums before, but nothing like this. I mean, it's three or four times as much as that we've ever had before. And we've, you know, there's always been great items, but I mean, this is really, there's so much to explore too. Yeah. It's not, what I kind of like about it is that you kind of have the idea of, it's not just a few things you can kind of walk up to and read about. Like you can go through like these things and find your own history, which is really cool.
Yeah. Anyway, it's happening here if you'd like to see it. We're also having a big dinner tonight. Tickets are still available. This one is a little pricey, but all the proceeds go to rescuing slaves. But it's dinner and a movie tonight here at the studios and a private tour. If you'd like to go, the mercury1.org/museum2018.
Glenn Beck.
Attention, Earthlings. This is not a test. This is the activation of the climate emergency system. Again, this is not a test. The Berkeley City Council has declared this climate emergency. Now, maybe you've been living under a rock and you didn't already know that a state of climate emergency already exists. But if you don't know something about it, like... where have you been? How do you not know? According to the foremost authority on climate doom, the Berkeley City Council. Now, Stu, I'm a doctor, so I may get into this and talk above people's heads because I'm a doctor.
Sure.
Yeah. But can you give me the qualifications of the Berkeley City Council on their climate?
Master's in climatology.
Really?
Doctorate in physics.
Really?
They stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize they were that. Okay. So according to the Berkeley City Council and the experts that you just heard Stu outline, they have declared emergency as dire as World War II. City Council member Shara DeVia, she warns that global warming is driving us toward the sixth mass extinction of the species, which could devastate much of life on Earth for the next 10 million years. Now, I feel uncomfortable making predictions that are a year out, but I'm not one of the experts in the Berkeley City Council talking about the end of all civilization and serious ramifications for the next 10 million years. But they're not afraid to say it. City Council resolution says, during World War II, I'm quoting, the Bay Area came together across race, age, class, gender, and other differences in an extraordinary regional mobilization, building and repairing Liberty ships, converting car assembly plants into tank manufacturing facilities. Now, I'm a doctor, but I'm not an expert. But would you say that during World War II, the people in the Pacific Coast, mm-hmm. In the Bay Area, that they did come together across all race lines?
Oh, it was a time of racial harmony, Glenn.
Was it?
Oh, my gosh.
Because yes. I thought that we rounded up all of the Japanese in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm. Well, the harmony existed in a camp, yes, but there
okay,
was
okay, all right, good, okay. Mm-hmm. The Berkeley City Council says the only way to avert World War II-level disaster is if Americans mobilize in the same way to confront climate change as we did in 1942 to confront Nazism. Because climate change and Nazism are definitely the same. I don't think I... This is a climate emergency.
I can give you an example.
Hurry up,
because we're
on the emergency climate system.
You know what the Nazis did. I don't have to tell you what that is. You can look at that at the museum here.
Yes,
you can see that.
Bad.
What the climate is doing is very similar. For example, New York Times just reported that they believe now that the ice melting around Antarctica mm-hmm. Has now led to 3/10 of 1 inch of sea level rise. So, I mean, if you think of 3/10 of 1 inch or the Holocaust, which one would you... I mean, they're basically the same. You could certainly see how it's pretty much... how you can almost not tell the difference.
They could have gone together really well because water would have put out the fires of the ovens.
There you go.
It's
a little dark, but yes, there you go.
Well, yeah. And it was probably not enough water at 3/10 of an inch.
Yes. No, you're definitely not.
The Berkeley City Council says the only way to avoid is to mobilize It gets worse. The resolution calls our current climate change emergency, and I'm quoting, I could not be on the emergency broadcast system, for the emergency climate broadcast system, and say this if it weren't true. The Berkeley City Council has declared this the greatest crisis in history. Now, here's where it really gets good. They have to, I mean, this is right out of the Galactic Empire Handbook. They say you have to mobilize workers to build and install renewable energy infrastructure. Berkeley says it wants to become a carbon sink by 2030. Well, a sink is in the same room as the crapper, but I have a feeling you'll be probably better off predicting that you're going to be the crapper. For the initiated, what a carbon sink means is they want the city's greenhouse gas emissions to be negative, which is kind of hard to do, to have a negative carbon footprint. You know, you have to be Amish without any farms.
There's a trick to that.
Yeah, there is. Because you can't truck anything in. You can't use any pesticides or anything else. You also can't have any animals to help you plow fields or anything else. It's going to be a fun life. It's going to be great. And here's the good news is they want it done in the next 12 years. So, but by the way, that's not their only strategy. I mean, this is a climate emergency. One of the biggest, no, I'm sorry, the biggest in history. So they've got to take some actions. Their resolution also mentions that Earth has too many people screwing up the atmosphere. So we must, quote, humanely stabilize the population. That's weird because we have the museum going on. And I've read a lot about stabilizing the population because there were too many insects that were infesting the Soviet Union, or too many too many undesirables infesting Europe. But I'm sure this time, I'm sure this time it's going to be completely humane.
It's Friday, June 15th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Brad Plumbo. He is a editorial intern with Young Voices. He is really, really bright. He has written a piece for glennbeck.com. He is a, to quote Phil Hendry, a gay man and a gay journalist. And he's written his article as a student from the University of Massachusetts, Amherst, about... the ruling of the Supreme Court on does a baker have to make a wedding cake for a gay couple? And we welcome you to the program. Brad, how are you, sir?
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Good. So we really enjoyed your article and wanted to give you some additional exposure here. Tell us your thoughts on the Supreme Court's ruling.
Yeah, absolutely. So I really felt very strongly about this issue, coming towards the masterpiece case from the perspective of a gay libertarian. I felt really strongly that if we're going to live in a free society, there have to be things both in life and in business that we can object to and say that violates our conscience. So I don't agree with the Christian baker, but I think that he has to have that right to say, I'm not going to provide that service because it violates my conscience. Because I want that right for myself. You know, I wouldn't want to bake a cake that had homophobic verses on it.
So, Brad, let me play something. This is from Campus Reform, where they're talking to students about bakers having to make a gay wedding cake. And I would love to get your response, seeing that you are also a millennial. Listen.
I think he should have to bake the cake because it's his job.
The fact that our Supreme Court found that this was an okay thing, I find appalling.
But if his job is to bake a cake for a wedding, even if he doesn't agree with it, he should still have to bake a cake for that wedding.
Do you think that he should be forced to bake a cake for a gay wedding?
I definitely think so. People have a right to eat the cake that they want to eat.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he should have to.
Well, it's in the cake clause.
Bake the cake because it's his job.
If there were an African-American baker and someone came in and asked them to make a cake for a KKK rally, should they be forced to do it?
I'm going to say no.
But they're a baker. It's their job, right?
Well, yeah, no. I mean, like, they shouldn't, but, like, I guess that kind of just, like, contradicts what I just said.
As for his religion, I think that his ability to exercise his freedom of religion ends when that encroaches on another person's ability to be who they are.
Haha. So, Brad, give us hope, please. Can you give us hope in the millennial generation?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll say that not all of us are that constitutionally illiterate. You know, there is no constitutional right to eat cake for
No, I believe Stu is right. That is buried in the cake clause.
I would support an amendment on that direction.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not opposed to that.
Right.
But what I'll say is, listen, obviously these guys don't understand. I know it's a gotcha video, so they're picking the worst, but these people, these young people that were questioned, don't understand that you can't have the best of both worlds. If you don't want a Jewish tattoo artist to have to make a Nazi symbol on someone, if you don't want a gay baker to have to make a cake with anti-gay Bible verses, then the people you don't like have to have those rights too. You know, you can't have it both ways. Either everyone has the right to ideological exception or no one does. So that's what we've got to decide. And I think this case decided it correctly.
So, Brad, I really, truly believe that the move to socialism, collectivism, and away from libertarian and American Bill of Rights is only because they have not heard these ideas. Nobody has expressed them. Nobody's asked them the question. It was clear that none of these people had been asked that question or even thought that way. So there is no pushback mentally in their life. Is that the case, or do they, or is there a real movement because people really believe it and they know what they're talking about?
Well, I would agree with you that many of these young people probably have not been exposed to the libertarian conservative argument. And I think there's two problems that are causing that. One would be the hyper-biased nature of our higher education system. You know, many of them are probably college students, but liberal professors outnumber conservative professors by some estimates 5-1, by some estimates 12-1. So, you know, I'm a college student. I can attest to this well. They're only hearing one side of the story. The other side is social media. They create an echo chamber where they only see less friendly content. So that's one of the things that I try to do as a writer and an activist, is to bring conservative ideas to young people.
You know, we have a museum going on, here, and it's all about the Bill of Rights, and, David Barton was talking about the freedom of religion, and he said it's actually way too narrow, to define it that way. He said they chose the word religion, he said, but that's not the way they referred to it. And he said, I wish they would have used the real word, and that is, freedom of conscience. And That is at the crux of the issue here. It's being made about evil religion, but it's actually about freedom of conscience, that all of us have to have that right. Because the question is, how do we stop bigots from using their religion as excuses to not serve people? Well, it doesn't matter if they're a bigot or not, does it?
I would say that obviously it matters whether they're a bigot or not. You know, that's not good to be a bigot, but
correct.
It's the law and their constitutional rights.
Correct.
They still have those same rights. You know, you have to have rights for the people you disagree with if you want them for yourself. So I would agree that it is absolutely a question of freedom of conscience, but it's also a question of freedom of speech. Because in this case, what's really at issue is expressive conduct. And what the court really had to answer was, can a gay couple force a Christian baker to violate his conscience and create something that's expressive and conveys a message he disagrees with? And I think the answer has to be no, because I wouldn't want to have the reverse happen to me.
Wouldn't you just say, though, if they do, that lessens your ability to live your life free and, you know, without having anybody discriminate against you?
I would not say that directly, you know, because there is no shortage of people willing to bake gay cakes. They could have gone anywhere. And I actually think that this decision is in a way a win for gay rights, right? Because it protected freedom of conscience narrowly, but it did. And, you know, gay people more than anyone should understand how important it is to have the right to dissent from ideas you disagree with.
Yes.
Because we went through years of discrimination, years where we couldn't get married, years where we'd have our children taken away just for being gay. So we should appreciate these constitutional rights more than anyone. We shouldn't be assaulting them.
First of all, I would just like to propose when we're talking about gay cakes, we use the term gake. I think it's a good summary.
Yeah.
You write in your story, Brad, if anything, this decision didn't go far enough. The court ruled 7-2 in the favor of the baker, but it was a narrow ruling in scope. It didn't hand down any broad declarations protecting free speech or individual conscience rights. A broader pro-liberty decision would have done more to advance individual freedom. Surely, you write, the gay community can appreciate the necessity of individual freedom and importance of protecting the First Amendment and right to dissent from ideas you agree with. You use the word surely. How sure are you on that one?
Well, you know, I say that's how I think they should feel. Obviously, that's not how the majority of LGBT people probably feel. But I will say that there are much more than you think. You know, I write and I tweet about conservative LGBT perspectives all the time. And there are a lot of people out there that feel the same way that I do, coming from that perspective. But it really is true. This decision didn't go far enough. It only talked about the specifics of this case. I really would like to see the court, and they probably will have to in the future, address this issue in a broader sense and hand down a broad decision that protects conscience rights for Christian bakers, for bigoted people, and for everyone.
Yep.
Yeah. Because that's what a free society looks like.
It's a great story. It's up at glenbeck.com. The Masterpiece Cake Shop ruling is actually a win for LGBT rights. Brad, can I just get your buy-in and endorsement of the term gake?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that sounds delicious.
Thanks, Brad.
Brad, thanks a lot. And thanks for a great story. And thank you for standing up for liberty and doing your homework to know what you actually believe. In other words, thanks for not being a moron. You're welcome. Thanks so much.
Yeah, by the way, that poll we talked about earlier, 36% of LGBTQ I think it was only LGBTQ in this particular poll, but 36% identified themselves as moderate or conservative. It's not a, we look at this as like,
it's not a block.
Yeah, it's not a block.
It's not a block. I mean, unless Kathy Griffin has something to do with it, then.
Oh gosh, we should talk about that.
Yeah, we got to talk about that when we come back. First, let me tell you about Tika Tiwari. He was in yesterday. Did you get a chance to see Tika?
No.
He was in yesterday. I spent about 20 minutes with him. We're so wrapped up in so many other things, but I saw him in the hallway and I said, hey, Tika, I got to talk to you. A little freak out about the digital currency. And I asked him to be on the show next week because he make me feel better.
Really?
Yeah. And he has examples from history on why you should feel really good about it right now. Mm. But anyway, Tika is an expert. He was a Wall Street trader for a long time. And then he started seeing the writing on the wall in high tech and cryptocurrency. It was like, this is the future. He came in as a consultant for us to try to teach us exactly what Bitcoin is and how it works and everything else as we were trying to explain it to you. About halfway through the meeting, I said, could you just make this available to our audience? Could we just put a course together? So he has. It's called smartcryptocourse.com, smartcryptocourse.com. If you want to understand the ins and the outs of cryptocurrency, call now, 877-PBL-BECK, 877-PBL-BECK. Get more information at smartcryptocourse.com. The intellectual dark web is apparently nothing more than a guise for Nazis. And
thank you. Finally somebody says it.
Right. Organizers, this is from The Gothamist. Organizers of a panel celebrating self-identified members of the intellectual dark web, a very serious circle, mostly consisting of men who really don't want you to call them alt-right, have persuaded a few real-life intellectuals into joining them on stage for a day of reflection at the Lincoln Center. New Yorker contributor and author Marcia Gessen tells The Gothamist that she was shocked to learn late last night that an event she'd agreed to speak at is actually an alt-right crap show hosted by racism debunking podcaster Dave Rubin.
Come on. I mean, at least try.
Dave Rubin was as left as you could come.
I mean, he was
on the Young Turks.
He was on the Young Turks. He had an awakening and went, and crap, I'm not a Republican, but I'm not a progressive either. I think I believe in the Constitution and the rights that guarantees. Dave Rubin's going to be joining us next week. You don't want to miss it.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. Really glad that you are here today. Welcome to Mr. Pat Gray from the Pat Gray Radio Roundup and his orchestra, which begins in 25 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So
it barely fits on the letterhead. That entire title.
Yeah.
But it's worth it because it's a powerful, powerful name of a show.
Yeah.
Even the begins at 25 minutes is part of the show title, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It is. Yes.
Which is weird because
it only works like right now.
Right now. But right now.
You know.
But that's when we expect people to use the letterhead,
right?
Is right now.
All right. So, Pat.
Yes.
Welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm good. I was excited about the museum last night.
I couldn't believe that. I mean, but I forget that you do your own, you know, homework and you're busy on your show because I have. He came up to me. Well, you were there. Were you there with him? No.
He was standing there, but not with you at the time.
And Pat came up to me and he said, "This Thomas Jefferson thing changes everything. Changes everything. How do we not know about it?" And we've been talking about it on the air this week, but you must have missed it.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel the same exact way. Stu and I were looking at it, 10 days ago?
Mm-hmm.
And Stu's like, "Look at these words. Why are these capitalized?" And we start reading them. And we're like, wait, what?
It's absolutely incredible. It's the exact opposite of everything taught about the person.
Right.
Disproved in his own handwriting.
In the Declaration of Independence first draft. Yeah,
now, there's going to be a lot of pushback because he was a slave owner. But what we're talking about is that he was a real strong abolitionist.
Strong
abolitionist. And people will say, "Well, he had slaves. If he's such an abolitionist, how do you own slaves?" Well, first of all, you couldn't free your slaves in Virginia. It was illegal to free your slaves. Even upon your death in Thomas Jefferson's time in 1826, you couldn't free your slaves upon your death.
If you're in debt.
If you're in debt. In fact, before that, it didn't matter if you're in debt or not.
Right. That's why George Washington freed his slaves on death, because in Virginia, that's the only way you could free people. They're like, "Yeah, he did it only when he died." Yes, because they tried to change the law and tried to change the law. And in the Declaration of Independence first draft, it says the king thwarted us every step of the way.
Yeah.
So they got it on death. That you could free your slaves. But then after that happened with George Washington, I think they changed it. Yeah,
it was, that law was revoked.
Right.
So,
and then especially if you were in debt before the law had been changed, if you were in debt and you died, you couldn't free your slave because that was asset.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's unfair to read that document and say that the main reason he wanted to break away from England was slavery.
I think that's true.
That's how overwhelming visceral. It's visceral. He's capitalizing letters that you could see. I mean, and he is insulting. It's not just, you know, here's an interesting, you know, argument about the Constitution we're about to create. No, it's like he's pissed off. Mm-hmm. It's like a tweet.
Yeah, it is. It is. I've never heard of this. Wow. I've never seen it. There are several things. Did you see of the Eastland, the SS Eastland thing from Woodrow Wilson about the 10th Amendment at the end of the museum?
Yeah.
I mean, there's stuff that you've never known, and it completely turns everything upside down. You look at the Declaration of Independence, and people always say, "How can that man, how could he possibly write all men are created equal and then not see slaves even as men?" And we've always had to dance around and go, well, but it was a different time, and he did, and he wanted to free the slaves. Well, why didn't he put it in the Constitution? He did. He put it in the Declaration of Independence, and because John Hancock had said beforehand, you know, almost quoting Ben Franklin, guys, we all better hang together or we're certainly going to hang separately. They knew if they broke up the 13 colonies, if they weren't in lockstep, the king would start to meddle with one of the colonies or two, and he would...
Whoever dissented,
and he would throw the whole thing out of line, and it would be over, and they'd all be dead. So they had to have unanimous consent. That's before the draft. So Thomas Jefferson goes and they say, you have to draft the Declaration of Independence. He said, great, you know, what ideas are we going to cover? And, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They go through the usurpations, all the things the king had done, the reason why they have to break away. All of them are one line. Oh, yeah, and he's raping our children. Oh, yeah, and he's taking our houses. Oh, yeah, and he's arresting people and they just disappear and we don't know where they are. One line. When he gets to slavery, it's a passionate paragraph. You have ever heard the line, because I know God is just, I tremble for my country?
Mm-hmm.
That was Thomas Jefferson's response when this failed. Mm. When this failed, he started to write nasty things about not just the Carolinas and Georgia, but also he started writing nasty things about the cowardice of others.
Like
the North that wouldn't stand up.
It's incredible.
So the guy who was one of the most passionate abolitionists at the writing of the Declaration of Independence, he's known as the fly in the ointment.
As a bad guy, really.
Unbelievable.
So often people consider him just a bad guy. And at best, they consider him a real complicated guy because
American Sphinx.
Uh-huh. No, he really wasn't. He was stuck in a situation he couldn't get out of, but he hated the situation.
And he fought against it. It's the most clear-cut stuff. I know how he fought in Virginia, but I've never been able to reconcile the Declaration of Independence. I've never been able to say all men are created equal. And I've never been comfortable with, well, they didn't consider them men. And I thought, well, you know, I got to give it. No, that's why one of the words in this visceral mm-hmm. writing of Thomas Jefferson, he capitalizes the word men. Now think of this. Back in the days of slavery, they were slaves. They were not men. Right. They were African-American or they were blacks. They were not men. They were Africans. Africans, they were savages, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were definitely not men. He capitalizes. He says the so-called Christian king goes over to another country, takes captives its natives, and they have never done anything wrong against him. He ships them to another hemisphere. If they make it through the grueling and horror of the journey, and then he takes these capital letters, men, and puts them for sale on the open market.
It's completely open and shut. It is incredible. He talks about how one of his, basically his main objection to the king is that he wants to continue a market of men being bought and sold and claims to be a Christian.
You wonder how the general public doesn't know that, but I'm really ashamed. I don't know that.
Yeah.
I was the founder since the 80s.
Yeah.
And certainly intensely since the 2000s and ever since we've been together in 2009 until today, and then just this week we're hearing this information. It's amazing.
And the only reason we found it, Stu. I've had that copy of the Declaration of Independence. It's from 1821. It's an engraving mm-hmm. of the first cop. I've had that for I don't even know how long, how many years I've had that. And I never noticed those two words until I was standing, Stu was reading it. I was on the other side of the document, and he says, look at this. And he's kind of pointing. And I noticed for the very first time these two capitalized words. And I think you said, why are these capitalized? I think was
that's
the first.
That's what drew me in. Honestly, I probably wouldn't even notice it if it wasn't capitalized.
What?
That's how crazy it is.
That's crazy. And you know
what an effective job they've done hiding this.
You aren't kidding.
Man.
Burying it.
You aren't kidding.
And then repositioning him and Washington.
You know why? Do you know why? I really believe it makes sense now why they stick Thomas Jefferson out as the slaveholder. Can you think? A theory. Can you think of? Because he's the one who actually wrote all men are created equal and endowed by their creator. So if you want to discredit that, you have to discredit the author, and you have to discredit him in a way where you say he didn't even believe that. And that's what they've done. To discredit the Declaration of Independence, you have to show that the guy who wrote it was a liar. It's incredible.
You really have to almost admire their evil work over the years.
It's been pretty thorough
and impressive.
When we were talking about the progressives and we were really doing our work, we said that a lot.
Yeah.
You've got to admire this. This is impressive the way they have just dismantled this country and our history.
Amazing.
Anyway, put it... put it back together. Have you read some of the other stuff in there? Have you read the Thomas Paine letter yet?
No.
You got to read the Thomas Paine letter. It's unbelievable.
So much good stuff here this weekend.
Oh, it's so good. So good.
And the Lincoln stuff is great too, which came from the Lincoln Library, right?
Not the stuff that's out.
Really?
No, the stuff that's, that came from the Lincoln Library is still in that case in my office.
Oh, yeah. It has to get to room temperature?
Yeah. Glenn lost the key.
I did not lose the key.
He lost the key.
I did not lose the key.
He's claiming he didn't lose the key, but where's the key?
Does Glenn have the key?
No, Glenn does not have the key.
I did not lose
the key. And we don't know who has the key.
We do not know who has the key.
What's in the box?
The Gettysburg Address.
Oh, don't worry about that. Are you kidding me?
I did not lose the key.
You're telling what? The Lincoln Museum lost the key?
I don't know who lost the key. I blame it on Federal Express because the key was sent by itself, so nobody had the key. Now, I'm leaving the studio. We're going on Facebook Live on The Blaze and GlennBeck.com, and I'm going into my office, and if...
This is so GlennBeckian.
If the key isn't there, then I think we have to call a locksmith, because the museum opens in an hour.
Yeah.
And so I think we have to call a locksmith, but I don't know. I mean, it would be a real honor if you knew it was like good, but I'm not sure that if I call a locksmith and say, hey, I need you to open a giant security case, you know, so we can get the Gettysburg Address out. I'm not sure that they will believe it or think it's right to do.
Because it could seem like you're just in the middle of a
National
Nicolas Cage
treasure.
Movie.
Yes, it might feel that way just a little bit. And I did call the Lincoln Museum yesterday and said, okay, the good news is we haven't lost the Gettysburg Address yet, but
well, you haven't checked outside the studio yet.
I haven't checked that box. Might already be gone.
More on this Pat Gray Unleashed today. Listen to it on the Blaze Radio and TV networks, as well as anywhere you can get podcasts.
The Pat Gray and His Orchestra Radio Roundup in 25 minutes, which is now 12 minutes away. Welcome to the program. We want to thank Simply Safe for being our sponsor. The Better Business Bureau heard more than 5,000 complaints about alarm companies. That puts home security in the top 10% of the most complained about industries. And here's how you fix home security. You do what Simply Safe did. They got rid of the contracts and the hidden fees. They work hard to earn your business. And instead of relying on tricks and hidden clauses in the contract, they just do it right. Simply Safe. They have all kinds of service points. They're A+ rating with a Better Business Bureau. There's 40,000 5-star reviews online. Simply Safe, according to People, is the way security should be done. You're getting the best protection, period, and no games. No strings attached, no wires, no contract. It's Simply Safe. Own your own security. Have it monitored professionally with SimpliSafe. And then relax. SimpliSafeBeck.com. SimpliSafeBeck.com. Check out the system right now at SimpliSafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck.
All right, so, Stu, I just found out that the head of the Lincoln Museum is here.
Oh, great.
What do you think? Just asking for etiquette purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Is it bad to say, so do you have the key?
Yes, that would be bad.
All right, okay.
You should instead.
Right. I just got word a minute ago that the key is on its way, and it's UPS, not Federal Express. It is on its way. It's just, it's a bit delayed or lost in transit, and it's on its way. So
the original copy of the Gettysburg Address, the key is lost.
No,
it's in transit.
Absolutely.
Well, I guess.
Look at me. Pretend you're the guy who just loaned us the Gettysburg Address.
Okay. Hey, I loaned you the Gettysburg Address.
Yeah. Alan.
Mm-hmm.
Key's in transit. It's about here.
So you've lost the key.
No.
You know where the key is then.
Absolutely. It's in transit.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Where?
In a truck.
In a truck. Where's
or
the truck?
Car.
It's or the car.
Look at mm-hmm. I did you bring a key? There's no way to have this conversation with him in work.
Because the reverse of the word lost would mean someone knowing where it was.
Right.
And you don't know that.
Right.
So it's lost.
Yeah. Just watch we're not gonna go live here because
what makes you believe the Gettysburg Address is actually in the box?
Alan is here.
Yeah, but Alan trusted you with it.
Yeah, but Alan had it in his safe back at home, and he's here to open it up and go, I am shocked.
That's brilliant.
I blame it on Alan. Join us. We'll see you this weekend if you can make it at the Mercury Museum all this weekend, Mercury Studios in Dallas.
Back.
Mercury1.org.